The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in a really significant piece of scientific writing. It's Richard Dawkins' 1986 landmark book, The Blind Watchmaker.
Yeah, it's absolutely essential reading, I think. It goes right to the heart of one of these, well, huge philosophical challenges we all face.
Right.
When you look at nature, you know, the way a hummingbird flies or just the veins on a leaf, it really looks designed. It feels purposeful.
It screams design, doesn't it?
It does. And the big question the book tackles is, how did life get so unbelievably complex, so intricate, without, you know, a conscious designer pulling the strings?
And that feeling, that intuition, that complexity must mean a creator, that goes way back. William Paley, the theologian, nailed it down in 1802 with his famous watchmaker analogy.
The classic argument. Find a watch on the heath, you know there was a watchmaker.
Exactly. And what's interesting is Dawkins sort of accepts Paley's challenge. He says, yes, life is incredibly complex, like a watch, even more so. And yes, it demands a powerful explanation.
But, and this is the core of the book, the explanation isn't a divine watchmaker. The designer, if you want to call it that, is a blind natural process, evolution by natural selection.
So it's really his definitive defense of Darwinism, isn't it? Written specifically to push back against those arguments, especially creationism or intelligent design, that insist complexity has to be guided.
Precisely. It aims to provide the definitive scientific alternative explanation for that complexity we see everywhere.
Okay, let's talk about the author then. Who is Richard Dawkins? Why was he sort of the right person at the right time to write this book in the mid-80s?
Well, Dawkins is a very eminent British scientist. An ethologist studies animal behavior and an evolutionary biologist. Hugely respected for his deep scientific understanding.
He wasn't new to this kind of thinking either, was he? He'd already made a big splash.
Oh, absolutely. A decade earlier, 1976, he published The Selfish Gene. That book was revolutionary. It basically reframed how we think about evolution, arguing that organisms are essentially just survival machines built by genes.
Right. The genes are the real players in the evolutionary game, using bodies to replicate themselves. It's a powerful, if slightly unsettling, idea.
It really is. It forces you to shift perspective. Yeah. So Dawkins had this deep scientific grounding, you know, Oxford professor level rigor. But crucially, he also has this incredible knack for communication.
He's a great explainer.
He really is. He can take these very complex, abstract ideas from evolutionary biology and make them understandable, even beautiful, using really vivid metaphors and analogies. He's a master advocate for that scientific worldview.
And The Blind Watchmaker felt like a natural follow-up then.
Yeah, almost a necessary one. If The Selfish Gene explained how genes try to survive and replicate, this book answers the why. Why is natural selection on its own enough to explain all the amazing complexity, the apparent engineering we see in living things?
So it was a direct response to challenges against evolution.
Very much so. He wrote it to be accessible, aimed at the intelligent layperson, directly countering creationist arguments that were gaining some ground at the time. It was his big statement on the power of natural selection.
His intellectual hammer, as you put it.
Something like that, yeah. To really drive home the scientific explanation for design.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself. The core argument, the journey he takes the reader on. You said it's aimed at persuading us that biological complexity isn't planned.
Exactly. Even though, let's be honest, our gut feeling often screams that it must be planned, he acknowledges that intuition up front.
He doesn't dismiss it.
No, he validates it. He agrees with the critics on one point. Pure random chance is absolutely hopeless for explaining life's complexity. You know, the idea of a tornado blowing through a junkyard and accidentally assembling a Boeing 747.
Right. It's statistically impossible.
Utterly impossible. And critics often stop there and say, see, it couldn't happen by chance. Therefore, God or a designer must have done it.
So what's the leap Dawkins makes? What stops people seeing the alternative?
It's this absolutely critical distinction he makes between two different kinds of selection or chance, if you like.
Okay.
There's single step selection. That's the junkyard tornado. Pure random chance, trying to get the perfect result in one go. Hopeless for complexity.
Right.
But then there's cumulative selection. And this is the engine of evolution. It's step by step. It's iterative. And crucially, it's non-random in one key aspect. It preserves the small improvements.
Ah, okay. So each step doesn't have to be perfect, just slightly better.
Exactly. Each generation, there's random variation, sure. But selection keeps the tiny changes that offer even a slight advantage, and then the next generation builds on that. Over millions, billions of years, this slow, gradual filtering process accumulates complexity. It's an algorithm, really.
So it's not a lucky dice roll. It's like a ratchet mechanism.
Oh, yeah.
Clicking forward, step by tiny step, never going all the way back.
That's a great way to put it. A blind ratchet, maybe. It doesn't know where it's going, but it accumulates advantageous changes. And Dawkins uses all sorts of tools to explore this: computer simulations, genetics, DNA as digital code, this idea of genetic space.
It sounds like he really tries to replace that sense of supernatural mystery with a different kind of wonder, the wonder of how these natural processes work.
That's exactly it. Celebrating the sheer creative power of this, well, fundamentally simple, mindless algorithm.
Okay, let's dig into some of those mechanisms and examples he uses. You mentioned Paley's Watch the Starting Point.
Right. Dawkins doesn't shy away from the complexity. He actually spends time describing things like bat echolocation in incredible detail.
Their sonar system.
Yeah, how bats build this complex auditory image of the world, filtering out noise, pinpointing insects in the dark. He details it precisely because it looks so much like sophisticated human engineering. He's saying, look how high the bar is. Now let me show you how natural selection can clear it.
So he sets up the problem clearly before offering the solution.
Exactly. And the core solution is cumulative selection, which he makes brilliantly clear with that famous computer simulation.
Ah, the weasel program.
That's the one. He thinks it is like a weasel. It's just genius because it directly addresses that it's too improbable argument.
How does it work again?
Okay, so imagine trying to get that phrase, 28 characters, including spaces, just by randomly typing letters. Single step chance. The odds are astronomical. Practically impossible. You'd never get it.
Right. That's the tornado in the junkyard again.
Precisely. But in Dawkins' cumulative version, the program starts with a random string of 28 characters. Then it makes copies, but with a small chance of random errors, mutations.
Okay.
Then, and this is the crucial non-random bit, the program selects the copy that is closest to the target phrase, methinks it is like a weasel. Maybe it just has one letter, right? Like the M.
Mm-hmm.
That slightly better version becomes the starting point for the next generation of copies and mutations. It locks in the M, then maybe it gets the E by chance. It keeps the improvements.
And because it preserves the successes at each step.
It reaches the target phrase astonishingly quickly. In a matter of dozens of generations, not billions, it shows how cumulative selection, keeping small gains, solves the problem of improbability. Selection is the driving force.
That's a really powerful illustration. And that connects to his idea of animal space, doesn't it?
It does. Think of animal space as this vast, theoretical, multidimensional space containing every single possible form an animal could take. Every imaginable body plan, limb structure, sensory organ.
Like a library of all possible creatures.
Sort of, yeah. But actual living animals only occupy a tiny, tiny fraction of this enormous space. And evolution, according to Dawkins, is a pathway through this space.
But not just any pathway.
No, a very constrained one. You can't just jump from a worm to a bird. Every single step along the evolutionary path has to be a viable living organism that can survive and reproduce. It has to be a continuous trajectory.
And he illustrates that with another computer program, right? The biomorphs.
Huh?
Yes. The biomorphs are brilliant. He starts with a very simple branching rule, like drawing a tree. Then he applies the cumulative selection principle. Generate offspring with slight random mutations in the branching rules, and he, acting as the selector, chooses which ones look interesting or lifelike to breed the next generation.
Then what happens?
You get these incredibly complex, diverse, often beautiful structures emerging from very simple starting points and rules. Some look like insects, some like trees, some like, well, just weird alien shapes.
But they look almost designed, even though it's just code and selection.
Exactly. It shows how complexity can emerge iteratively. Without a blueprint, it makes the abstract idea of navigating animal space much more concrete. It's quite eerie, actually.
Okay, so cumulative selection can build complexity. But what about the argument that some systems are just too complex to have evolved gradually? The irreducible complexity argument.
Yes, the classic challenge. The idea is that some biological machines, like a mousetrap maybe, need all their parts working together. Remove one part, and the whole thing fails. Therefore, critics argue it couldn't have evolved step by step.
And the poster child for this argument is often the vertebrate eye. It's so intricate.
It is, and Dawkins tackles it head on. He shows how you can get to a complex camera-like eye through a series of gradual advantageous steps. It didn't just pop into existence fully formed.
So what would the steps look like?
Well, you start incredibly simply. just a patch of light-sensitive cells on the skin, like some primitive organisms have. Is that useful? Absolutely. Better than nothing for detecting shadows, maybe predators or light sources.
Okay, a tiny advantage.
Then imagine that patch sinking slightly into a cup shape. Now it gives a sense of direction where the light is coming from. Again, a small improvement.
Still better than just a flat patch.
Right. Then maybe the opening of the cup narrows, creating a kind of pinhole effect. That gives a sharper, albeit dimmer, image, like a pinhole camera. Still useful.
Getting more complex.
Then maybe a transparent layer evolves over the opening for protection, which later develops into a lens to focus the light properly. And you get different refinements like an iris to control light levels. Each step is small, plausible, and confers an advantage over the previous stage.
And the key thing is, we can actually see examples of these intermediate stages in animals alive today, can't we?
That's the crucial evidence. Things like limpets have simple eye cups. Nautiluses have pinhole eyes. Different mollusks show different stages of lens development. It proves these intermediate forms are perfectly viable ways of life. The eye isn't irreducibly complex. It has a clear, gradual evolutionary history.
So evolution isn't just about eliminating the unfit, it's also about actively building things.
Yes, exactly. Which leads nicely into another idea, constructive evolution and evolutionary arms races. It's easy to picture natural selection as purely negative weeding out failures.
The nature red in tooth and claw idea.
Right. But Dawkins emphasizes it's also a powerful creative force. Think about predators and prey. Let's say cheetahs start chasing gazelles. The slightly faster cheetahs are more likely to catch gazelles and reproduce. So cheetahs get faster over generations. But what does that do?
It puts pressure on the gazelles. The slightly faster gazelles are more likely to escape.
Exactly. So gazelles get faster too. But faster gazelles then put pressure back on the cheetahs to become even faster, or maybe stealthier or smarter.
It's an escalating cycle.
It's an arms race. Each side drives the evolution of the other towards greater sophistication. Faster running, better camouflage, sharper senses, more complex hunting strategies. Selection is constantly building and refining adaptations on both sides. It's incredibly dynamic and creative.
That makes sense. Okay, let's try and synthesize some of the big themes, the core messages someone should take away from this book.
I think the absolute number one takeaway has to be the power of cumulative selection. It's the engine. It's the central metaphor, really, for how you get order and complexity emerging from what's essentially a mindless, purposeless process.
And that really messes with our intuition, doesn't it? Because we're designed, or evolved perhaps, to see agency and purpose everywhere, and we just can't grasp the time scales.
Precisely. Our brains aren't built to intuitively understand what millions or billions of years of tiny incremental changes compounded can actually achieve. We think in terms of human lifetimes, maybe a few generations. Evolution operates on geological time.
Which leads to the second big theme, maybe, this potent illusion of design.
Yes. Dawkins is very clear. Life looks designed. The appearance of purpose is overwhelming. But he argues this appearance is the inevitable result of that long cumulative process of trial and error.
Filtering out the failures, keeping the successes.
Exactly. Over eons, the features that work, that help survival and reproduction, get preserved, refined, built upon. The process itself has no goal, no foresight, no plan. But looking back at the product, the bird's wing, it looks like a masterpiece of engineering.
It's the outcome that looks designed, not the process itself.
Right. Which ties into that idea you mentioned earlier, evolution as a tinkerer, not an engineer.
Explain that difference again.
Well, an engineer, ideally, starts from scratch with a clear goal, designing for optimal perfection using the best materials. A tinkerer works with whatever bits and pieces are already lying around.
Modifying existing stuff?
Yeah, modifying pre-existing structures, often imperfect ones, for a new purpose or a slight improvement. Evolution doesn't get to go back to the drawing board. It has to work with the genetic and anatomical legacy of an organism's ancestors.
And this actually explains some of the weirdness or flaws in biology.
Absolutely. Think about the blind spot in our own eye. It's where the optic nerve passes through the retina to connect to the brain. Creates a literal hole in our vision.
Which our brain cleverly fills in, but it's still there.
A sensible engineer designing an eye from scratch would never route the wiring like that. They'd run the cables out the back, wouldn't they?
Logically, yes.
But evolution, tinkering with the existing setup inherited from earlier vertebrates, couldn't easily reroute everything. It just worked around the existing structure. So these imperfections, these design flaws, are actually powerful evidence for evolution. The signature of a blind tinkerer, constrained by history, rather than evidence for a perfect designer.
That's a fascinating point. Okay, Dawkins is also known for his way with words. The book must have some memorable quotes or ideas that really stick with you.
Oh, definitely. His language is often as powerful as his arguments. The most obvious one is the title phrase itself, which sums up the whole book. Natural selection is the blind watchmaker, blind because it does not see ahead, does not plan consequences, has no purpose in view.
But
yet the living results of natural selection overwhelmingly impress us with the appearance of design as if by a master watchmaker, impress us with the illusion of design and planning.
That just perfectly captures that central paradox, doesn't it? The blind process creating apparent purpose. It's the direct rebuttal to Paley.
Completely. Another key idea, maybe not a single quote, but a constant theme, is his hammering home that evolution is not the same as pure chance.
Right, addressing that common misconception.
He uses things like the monkey typewriter analogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, monkeys randomly hitting keys for eternity will eventually type Shakespeare, but the timescale is absurd. He uses that to show how ridiculous single-step chance is for explaining complexity.
Before he introduces cumulative selection as the real workable mechanism. So he acknowledges the difficulty first.
Exactly. He takes the problem of improbability seriously. And then there's the quote about the wider philosophical impact. It's quite provocative.
Which one is that?
He wrote famously, "Although atheism might have been logically tenable before Darwin, Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist."
Wow, that's a big statement.
It is. And what he means is that before Darwin, the sheer complexity and apparent design of life was probably the single strongest, most intuitive argument for the existence of a creator God. It seemed unexplainable otherwise.
The argument from design.
Yes. Darwin, by providing a powerful, purely naturalistic mechanism, natural selection that could explain that complexity, effectively removed what many saw as the main intellectual pillar supporting the need for a creator. It fundamentally changed the landscape for belief and non-belief.
It offered a complete alternative worldview, grounded in science. Okay, beyond the biology and the philosophy, how can we actually apply these ideas? Are there practical takeaways from the blind watchmaker for, you know, everyday life?
I think there's several, actually. The first one is huge. It's a masterclass in critical thinking.
How so?
It trains you to spot what Dawkins calls arguments from personal incredulity. That's when someone says, essentially, "I personally cannot imagine how X could have happened naturally, therefore it must have been designed supernatural miracle."
It seems too complicated, so it must be wrong.
Right. The book forces you to question that intuition, to ask, okay, it seems improbable in one go, but is there a plausible, gradual, step-by-step process that could lead to this outcome over time? Applying that skepticism to claims you encounter everywhere, politics, advertising, pseudoscience, is incredibly valuable.
That makes sense. What else?
Well, the core principle itself, cumulative selection, is actually the bedrock of a lot of modern innovation and problem solving. Think about iterative development.
Like in software development, agile methods and things like that.
Exactly. Or product design, or even scientific research. Instead of trying to create the perfect finished product or theory in one giant leap,
which is often impossible,
you start with something simple, a basic version, a minimum viable product,
yeah,
a preliminary hypothesis. You test it, you get feedback from the environment, users, data, experiments, you keep the bits that work, you tweak or discard the bits that don't, and you build incrementally.
It's evolution in action, but guided by us. Tinkering.
It is tinkering. The book provides this deep natural analogy for why that iterative process, starting simple, failing small, learning, adapting, preserving successes, is so much more effective than trying to achieve perfection from the outset.
That's really applicable. Anything else?
I think internalizing the sheer scale of geological time and the power of tiny changes compounding gives you a valuable long-term perspective.
How does that help practically?
It highlights that small, consistent efforts in almost any area, learning a skill, saving money, building relationships, improving your health, can lead to enormous, almost unbelievable results over time. It's the same principle. We often overestimate what we can do in a day, but underestimate what we can achieve over years or decades of steady, cumulative progress.
The power of compounding applied beyond finance.
Precisely. That simple algorithm that created the biosphere can also shape our own lives if we understand and apply it.
Okay, as we wrap up, what's the single most important thing you think listeners should take away from The Blind Watchmaker? Your final thought.
For me, the most profound lesson is how science replaces the argument from ignorance, saying, "We don't know, therefore magic God," with a powerful, rational, testable explanation. It doesn't claim to have all the answers instantly, but it provides a framework, a mechanism cumulative selection that makes the complexity of life understandable. The wonder isn't diminished. It's shifted from a supernatural mystery to the incredible power of natural processes and the scientific method itself. That's the real marvel.
That's a great point. For me, the lasting insight is just how simplicity can generate such breathtaking complexity. It's almost counterintuitive. You have this simple, mindless algorithm variation, selection, inheritance, and acting over immense time. It produces everything from bacteria to redwood trees to human brains. It really underscores that you don't need a grand plan or a conscious designer to get the staggering diversity and sophistication we see in the living world. It's an incredibly powerful and, frankly, elegant idea. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.